If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Morning, Chicagoland. It's Dave Player on 720 WGN. Giving voice to the voiceless, the Chicago Defender newspaper condemned Jim Crow, catalyzed a great migration, and focused the electoral power of black America. Robert Abbott founded the Defender in 1905, smuggled hundreds of thousands of copies into the most isolated communities in the segregated South, and was dubbed a modern Moses, becoming one of the first black millionaires in the process. His successor wielded the paper's clout to elect mayors and presidents, including Harry S. Truman, John F. Kennedy, who would have lost in 1960 if not for the Defender's support. And along the way, its pages were filled with columns by legends like Ida B. Wells, Langston Hughes, and Martin Luther King. And drawing on dozens of interviews and extensive archival research, author Ethan McKelley constructs a revelatory narrative of race in America and brings to life the reporters who braved lynch mobs and policemen's clubs to do their jobs from the age of Teddy Roosevelt to the age of Barack Obama in his new book, The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. Good morning to you, Ethan.
Good morning, Dave. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. I got to tell you, absolutely fabulous book. Such depth on how this newspaper really not only was important to Chicago, but it was important to America.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a newspaper almost like any other with the power and an influence that really radiated from Chicago across the country.
Now, you started the story by showcasing the fact that the Defender recorded our expansion of democracy to the degree which African-Americans were locked out of the process at the time. The Defender recorded the injustice and became part of the process of opening up opportunity and making people more aware of the civil rights issues that were at stake, both in the North and in the South.
That's right. The founder of the Defender, Robert S. Abbott, was born in Georgia, in rural Georgia, at the end of the Civil War, and came to Chicago originally for the 1893 World's Fair, where he met Frederick Douglass, the escaped slave and friend of Abraham Lincoln, who had come through the era of the Civil War and was 75 years old, but was still a dynamic spokesperson for the African-American people. And it was Douglass who chartered the next generation of the civil rights movement at the 1893 World's Fair, when he spoke and organized with an entire generation of young African-American leaders.
Now, Robert Abbott, just a little bit more about him. His father died when he was just an infant, and he lost his father, but by far the greatest influence on his life was his stepfather.
That's right. And his stepfather was a man with a really unique background, was someone who had been raised in Germany and had been born in the United States, but had been raised in Germany, had a German father and an African mother. And when he came back to the United States as an adult, he very quickly identified as an African American and married Robert Abbott's mother, who you said was a widow, and adopted Robert Abbott and gave him the benefit of his European education as well as his European outlook. This is very important to Robert Abbott because it gave him a reserve of confidence that helped take him into a very difficult era for African Americans.
I mean, he attended boarding schools when he was a kid, and he went to Hampton.
That's right, and Hampton was the premier academic institution for African Americans of its day. It's still a very important Hampton University, I should say, is still a very important historically black university in the United States. But at the time, it was Booker T. Washington's alma mater. It was a place that was really famous for producing the top intellects of the African-American community.
Well, and he was part of a nationally renowned singing group at the school, and he got to tour the country, which really opened his eyes to what was happening in America.
Absolutely. The Hampton Quartet, you have to imagine that this was an era before recorded music, before amplified music even. So a singing group from Hampton singing African-American spirituals was really a unique and powerful thing that the people were just in love with as it traveled around the country. And when they got to the World Fair, they had a special privilege, because it was a quartet from Hampton, to be able to perform in the White City, which was a very rare privilege indeed. And so Robert Abbott really had access to everything. The World Fair, both during the day and at night, when it was really just the performers and people who were part of the World Fair who were interacting with each other.
Well, it gave him the opportunity to meet the prominent members of Chicago's black community, too, which was inspirational to him.
That's right. And these were people who had become, you know, the first African-American alderman, the first African-American congressman, the first African-American to serve as a committeeman in Chicago. All of these firsts were people that were gathered at the Haitian Pavilion, which is where Frederick Douglass was organizing them during the fair.
And after the World's Fair, I know he attended the Kent College of Law, and he struggled when he left law school after establishing, you know, some relationships with some friends and stuff. He expressed his belief that, you know, he took his education and what he's learned and what he saw around the country, and, you know, he felt like the African-American people, especially in the city of Chicago, needed a newspaper that would wake them up and expose the atrocities that were happening in the Southern system, because the North was a little bit different at the time, and make demands for justice, and somebody had to be that voice.
That's right. The newspaper was really born out of that spirit of resistance that I mentioned with Frederick Douglass. And Abbott really conceived of the newspaper as a way to become a mass communications vehicle for the African-American community. Nothing like this had ever been done before. And really, the technology of newspapers had changed significantly, such that an average person with a very small budget, it must be said, was able to take their newspaper and produce it at a very reasonable price and sell it to a large audience. And this was all able to be done quickly because newspapers had changed from a kind of artisanal enterprise to an industrial enterprise. And Robert Abbott took advantage of that change and was able to get a newspaper that sold hundreds of thousands of copies. This had really never been done.
Right, because black newspapers really at the time were not profitable. His friends were like, are you really going to publish this? They questioned him doing that, right?
They made fun of him. They ridiculed him, in fact, for trying to do something silly like get readers for a large circulation newspaper. This was thought of as a pretty gauche activity at the time. But Robert Abbott had his vision, and within a few years, his critics were actually subscribers and supporters of the newspaper.
Now, the first issue of the Defender, Chicago Defender, appeared on May 5th, 1905. 300 copies were printed originally. It was a six-column, four-pager. What were some of the first articles?
Well, he focused on a visitor to Chicago. I should say that Mr. Abbott was the reporter, editor, and circulation director for the newspaper. But he focused on a visitor to Chicago from Liberia and talked about Africa in terms that were equal-handed and were generally positive. This was at a time that most newspapers ignored the existence of African people almost entirely. He also talked about Southern atrocities, efforts by white Southerners to oppress black Southerners. And he also included a lot of community news, a lot of what we would call kind of people news, what everyone was up to and what their activities were. The advertising was also very community-based and was sold at a price, as Abbott recalled years later, that was whatever the advertiser wanted to pay.
Wow. Wow. And it's a shame, too, because I know in your research you found out that no copies of the first printing has ever been found. There's history on what was in there, but there's no physical copies or archives left of that first paper.
Not of the first one, but we have some from a little bit later that year.
Well, very cool. And the rest is history because, of course, the Defender, not the same paper, so to speak, but this Defender is still in production today. We're talking to author Ethan McKelley in his new book, The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. And there's more with him next on 720 WGN. Good morning. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. And we're talking to author Ethan McKelley in his new book, The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. So what was the turning point that really put the Defender on the map nationally, Ethan?
Well, the Great Migration really was the event in which the Defender was able to realize its full influence as a communications vehicle for African Americans around the country. When the Defender decided, and it was a process for it to decide, that it was time for African Americans to leave the South, it issued a call, and within a few months, really, the African American community of Chicago doubled from about 50,000 to over 100,000. And this was really something that was the beginning, of course, of a movement of hundreds of thousands of people and millions eventually from the South to the North, but it was really the Defender that started.
Fast forward to 1955, and you cover really the history of this paper and the story of Emmett Till.
Absolutely. Emmett Till was a young man from Chicago who had gone to Mississippi on a summer vacation, and he supposedly made an offhand comment, maybe even just a whistle, to a older white woman who worked at a store in the town that he was visiting. And Emmett Till was then in the middle of the night taken from his home and beaten and killed, and his body was discovered a day later. The Defender was the first paper to publish photos of Emmett Till's body, which was something that his mother, Mamie Till Mobley, wanted to happen so that the country would know what had happened to her son.
Oh, it's horrifying.
Were, of course, that's right. And they were graphic images of a body that had been tortured and beaten and thrown in a river. So you can imagine how gruesome really it looked. But it sent the really around the country, not just that these atrocities were still going on, but that they had really crossed a line and become unacceptable. This was the moment that the country is very similar to what you're seeing today with the response to a lot of videos of police shooting young African-American men. It's had that response of really making the public say enough is enough, and the white and black public, I mean.
Well, you know, and I was going to say the newspaper called on the Eisenhower administration not only to prosecute Till's murders in the federal court, but to put forward legislation that would outlaw lynching once and for all, because it was still, not that it was allowed, but it was just, there was no legislation about it. And as far as protecting African Americans' voting rights, they said there can be no compromise at this time, the Defender warned. Your child can be the next victim in this situation. It's terrible.
It was a time in which the courts and the law enforcement and all of the state and local apparatus throughout the South was arranged to give impunity to these kind of acts. The men who killed Emmett Till were tried in Mississippi, but not it was not a fair trial. It was really just a trial to make sure that they would never be given a fair trial. An all-white jury found them not guilty of a crime in which there was really a preponderance of evidence to suggest that they were guilty. So the Defender was calling for federal intervention on multiple levels at a time that the state and local courts were really there to help the white supremacists, not to stop them.
We took a look at Sunday, February 6, 1956, after months of discussions, revisions, trial and error. The first edition of the Daily Offender, Daily Defender, was finally ready. So the first issue included, you know, continuing civil rights struggles in the South. And within the first week, and appropriate for this weekend, included coverage of Martin Luther King's visit to Chicago.
Absolutely. And the Defender was maybe the first national, was the first national publication to discover Martin Luther King, and the Defender served as his journalistic guardian for the first few years of the civil rights era before the mainstream newspapers, the white-owned newspapers, discovered the so-called race beat. The Defender was absolutely recognized Martin Luther King for the tremendous power of his personality almost from the first moment that he began leading the Montgomery bus boycott.
Yeah, it's, I mean, from the editorial pages, now they're discovering Reverend Martin Luther King is not just another preacher, but a profound Christian leader with a grasp of life so tender and devout that his reactions are loaded with sociological dynamite.
Thank you for reading those words. Yeah, I love that. It still gives me goosebumps.
Yeah,
as it did the first time I read it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Defender was right there. I mean, through the throes of the civil rights movement of the 1960s, and you can fast forward to the days of Harold Washington, the city's first black mayor, and the coverage of the debates that led Harold to the most powerful office in the city.
Well, that's right. And of course, by that time, the Defender has been reduced a little bit in its national influence. But within the city, it was still regarded as a voice of conscience. And the election of Harold Washington in 1983 was, of course, a racially charged era in the city. And the Defender was there to provide some clarity to make sure that people would be able to understand very, very simply what was happening and who was saying what and how they were saying it. It also served a critical function after Harold was elected in making sure that he tried to be everything that the community hoped that he would be. The Defender did not shrink back from its responsibility to serve as a voice of conscience for Harold Washington as mayor as it did before he was mayor.
And the Defender is still around today. It's a different type of paper than it was back then, but it is still around today.
That's right. It's a weekly newspaper today with a much reduced circulation, but I've been in touch with the folks on and off who continue to run the newspaper, and they're just as hardworking and just as dedicated as we were when we worked there in the 1990s. It's never been a newspaper that's been flushed with resources, but it's always had the enthusiasm and camaraderie of the staff to kind of keep it going and to compensate for the lack of resources.
Well, the book is The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America. The author, Ethan McKelly, really a terrific, terrific book, very detailed, that really, you know, walks you across the civil rights movement from the 1800s to today. And congratulations. Great book.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on.